most of the development that's happened in my business has been development here. Okay, we're developing buildings, but really I'm developing my mind in terms of understanding how not to be directed by fear. So I might have fears about a project, but that doesn't have to change my decision making.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I'm so excited to announce our amazing guest, Mark Davenport. Mark, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, everyone. So Mark and his partner, Phoebe, are real estate investors with a passion for renovating historic buildings and improving property management. Their story is one of epic growth, epiphanies that produce real life change and going from owning a duplex to 130 doors in 5 years. Well, that is awesome. I can't wait for the listeners to hear your story. Mark, thanks so much. Why don't you take us back in time and tell us, you know, what you were doing before real estate and what drew you into the space and how you got started?
I was started out as a musician. I still am a musician, really, but I studied drums in school in the UK and then transitioned into teaching and playing for local bands. So I was loving that, having a good time doing it. It was enjoyable. And my partner, Phoebe, and I, we bought our first house after we'd been married for a couple of years, and it was a fixer-upper. It needed work. So we just kind of got into it because that's kind of the way we are. And, you know, we had some friends who helped us out with different things. Phoebe had a lot more experience with that than I did. So we kind of got into it. In terms of getting into real estate development, it's mostly happened by accident, by just the way the situation has developed. You know, we started with a single family house, renovated that on the side. Phoebe, my partner, is an occupational therapist, or what she was working as an occupational therapist. I was a musician. So, you know, we'd take our weekends and evenings or mornings and pull out walls or refinish floors or do mudding or whatever that we could do that needed to be done.
And did that feel like a grind at that time? Like working in the after hours?
Yeah, we wanted to get stuff done and we didn't want to pay contractors to do everything and just sit back while everything was getting done. We wanted to learn, we wanted to go. I mean, my schedule as a musician was I would be teaching from maybe in the mid-afternoon and then playing in the evening. So I had the mornings, and then we didn't have any kids at the time. So, you know, we had time at the weekends, or her schedule was flexible. So we were just excited about it. We just saw this house that we'd love to own and we could make beautiful things in. We just went ahead and tried it.
Awesome. Yeah, that's really great. And so did you end up renting that place out?
We did. And it was just a horror show. we moved overseas after we'd done most of the renovation. We moved overseas and rented it because we didn't want to sell it. We wanted to rent it. The rent would cover the mortgage and we'd make a little bit off the top. We wouldn't make a lot, but we'd make something. It would certainly pay for itself. But some of our early tenants there, they really took us to the cleaners in terms of that. They knew they ended up not paying, and they knew a lot of the regulations around how they could just kind of get away with not paying for a long time. They knew the eviction laws ultimately better than we did. So it was kind of a crash course for us. Our first experience renting was a complete nightmare. So I guess it didn't put us off, though. Like many things, you have a bad experience and you're like, okay, well, this doesn't mean we don't want to ever do it again, but it does mean we've learned some lessons.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, you guys focus on historic properties and your story is one of epic growth. Tell us about some of that growth and how you transformed your portfolio over the last 5 years.
Yeah. So we lived overseas. When we came back and back to the US, we were on the East Coast in New Hampshire. And I think we were both kind of looking at the trajectory of our lives and thinking, well, we work in 9 to 5. How's this working? We're just kind of punching the clock to earn enough money to pay the mortgage and save for retirement. It just seemed a little ho-hum, a little boring. So we were like, no, I think there's more to be done. I think there's more that we can kind of do here than that. So we finished renovating that single family house that I mentioned and sold it and put the proceeds into a duplex, a foreclosed duplex in the neighboring city, which had a terrible reputation, but it was incredible value for money. And we thought there was an opportunity. So we renovated that one and lived downstairs. And that was our first taste of having the upstairs tenant pay the mortgage. And it was just great. It wasn't the nicest apartment. It wasn't the nicest place to live that we'd ever lived in. But having the beginnings of freedom to not to reduce our overhead so that we weren't having to work to survive, that was, it was huge. And then from there, you know, we ended up pulling a HELOC against that property and buying a 4-unit in another town, which was an even worse reputation. Of course, now we love towns with bad reputations because we just do very well with them. And so we ended up selling both those two properties. We moved down to Brooklyn, New York. We bought a couple of 6 units, a 3-unit, a 2-unit, renovated those, started working with investors, sold all of those, moved to Kansas City and bought a couple of towers. That's the short of it.
Wow. That's awesome. Yeah. So, and you know, there's so much there. I'm sure we could go into a lot of detail about all of those different steps. I'm curious, at the time that you bought that duplex, were you doing some learning on the side? Like, how are you making these decisions? Did you read books? Were you listening to podcasts? How are you figuring out what your next step would be?
I was talking with Phoebe. That was mostly it. She's my partner.
Yeah.
You know, we got turned on to things like Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and all the blurb and the hubbub surrounding real estate investment. We came to that late in the day. And even now, we're not really that engaged in it. Mostly our heads are down and we're developing what we're developing. So we ended up finding this path mostly because we wanted to grow, because we wanted to increase our net worth, because we wanted to do something that people appreciated. The tenants that we put in our properties, they loved it. Everyone loved the work we would do on our properties. Like, it was a big blessing to all concerned. We loved the development ourselves. So we weren't really reading anything about it then. Now I read more about it now, but we just kind of stumbled upon it. I guess that's what I'm kind of referring to when I said, how do we get into real estate development? Well, just by chance.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, the whole, well, I mean, there's been educational platforms around for a while, but I remember when I started learning in 2010, it wasn't so prolific as it is now. And I remember getting books out of the library. That was like one thing I did back in 2010. Anyways, so that's great. And you mentioned you moved to Madison. Can you tell us, or sorry, you mentioned you moved to Kansas City. Can you tell us why you decided to move to Kansas City?
Yeah, we had some good friends of ours moved to the Midwest and we were just visiting them, you know, as part of their move. And we were looking at properties here just because we weren't in a position to buy anything, but we were just like, just see what's around, you know, never been to the Midwest before, check it out, see what's going on. And we looked at this school building that had been on the market for a while, and until like 1 year ago at that time, it was a school building. So it's a functioning school building operating, you know, new roof. It wasn't derelict. It was a fine building and it was on the market for $200,000. And we were just astonished because in New Hampshire or Brooklyn or the East Coast and probably the West Coast too, that doesn't happen. You don't have school buildings that are 35,000 square feet hit the market for anyone to just go and snap up for $200,000. So we were just like, that's crazy. You could put 35 apartments in this building. And we were just like, well, this is obviously, there's obviously the market here obviously is very different from what we know on the East Coast. And since we, at that point, we knew we loved growth with our business. We were thinking we wanted to do more with our business. We didn't want it to just be a side hustle with real estate. We wanted to knuckle down and make it, you know, what we were doing for our career. So we were like, well, this is obviously a place that's good for us. And we didn't buy that school building, but we knew that the market just keeps on throwing up these buildings. So we won't get that one, but we'll get the next one. So that's why we moved to Kansas City.
For sure. That's awesome. So, you know, you focus on historic buildings. Can you tell us about, you know, what you like to focus on in the sort of historic realm, like what counts as historic for you and what is you like about those properties and maybe one of your recent projects?
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-CAP.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Yeah, I think probably the biggest thing we like about it is the value, how you can buy these properties for cheap, which that's how we got into it, because we were just like, wow, these properties, they're just a lot cheaper than everything else. I think maybe people are afraid, people are scared of developing these properties. But we're looking at it and thinking how much you can make off them, because the purchase price is low, is a lot higher. So it was value. As we've done more of it, we've come to really, well, myself, I've come to appreciate the style and the beauty of these historic properties. But I wouldn't say that I necessarily had that as a motivation to start with. I think it was kind of a survival motivation. It was, look, there's an opportunity here. Wow, that's cheap. Yeah, we can do that for $20,000. All right, let's do it. And then just kind of going for it. So we're doing a bunch of different ones, but the one I'll talk about is in a four-story historic building that's been vacant for 60 years, but is 120 years old. And we're converting it into a boutique hotel in Hutchinson, Kansas. And we just started demo last week, and it's next to the building I'm staying in now. So I was just there this morning, and the guys are taking out the interior walls and they pulled out the drop ceiling. So we're looking up, and this is the original tin ceiling there, mostly in good condition. So that's a project we work on, and it's super exciting. It's awesome for, we love it. It's awesome for the community, because you have this derelict building that hadn't seen any attention for a long time being repurposed, where resources and time and energy are being plowed into this building, and it will hopefully become a center of activity, or at least a contributing building to the downtown area in Hutchinson, Kansas. So we just started that project, and that one is really exciting.
Yeah, that's awesome. And how did you decide that that was going to be a reasonable project for that area? Like, does the market support the need for new hotel space?
Yeah, we think so. In Hutchinson, I mean, there's hotels in the north of the city, but downtown there's no hotels. So this would be the only offering in downtown. It's also the only kind of boutique hotel in the town as well. It's a town of 40,000 people. And that really is why this project happens, is because we have to fundraise, and we're, you know, putting together the financing for getting the project done. And the people we talk to, I mean, we have our due diligence to do with numbers and estimates and all that stuff, but it seems kind of obvious to most people that, oh yeah, a hotel downtown, yeah, that just makes a lot of sense. It's next to a historic theater that pulls in from, you know, all over the state, people for shows and movies. So, and again, because it's historic, the building's so cheap to buy. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, the risk is low also, because you're not having to come in with $1 million for the purchase, mm-hmm. You know, so you don't have a lot to lose, is my personal feeling.
For sure. Well, that's really awesome. I want to circle back to something that you mentioned earlier about the reason that you got into historic buildings is partially because of the price point and just being like, let's go for it and be bold. Can you speak to some of that, like, you know, boldness that was required, and also maybe some lessons that were learned, like challenges and opportunities that you had as a result of kind of jumping into something somewhat unknown?
Yeah. I mean, most of the development that's happened in my business has been development here. Okay, we're developing buildings, but really I'm developing my mind in terms of understanding how not to be directed by fear. So I might have fears about a project, but that doesn't have to change my decision-making. I don't have to make fear-based decisions. I can still make good decisions that are based on good information. And in terms of being bold, that's something I learn a lot from my partner. She's a lot more naturally bold. I'm probably more like that now because of her. But I guess there's the idea of, you know, what's the worst that can happen? If you go for these situations and you go for properties where there's opportunity, where the price point is low, and you're willing to come to the table and bring your skills and your creativity and your problem solving, it's possible to make these projects work. For me, it's all personal development. I'm developing my mind to not be dominated by fears or concerns when I see a new project, to not allow myself to go down rabbit trails of like, oh, what if this happens? What if, you know, the plumbing goes? Or, well, there's always a solution. There's always a solution that can be found, and nothing will be the end of us on that level. But sometimes it's not. It feels like it's big drama or a big risk, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. What were some of the ways that you started training your mind to not make like fear-based decisions and to be willing to take kind of leaps?
Yeah. I read a little bit these days, and one of the things I read was, within every problem is its own solution. So one of the, when we were developing a 6-unit building in New Hampshire, as part of the development, we were developing 2 apartments on the ground floor, and there were 4 apartments in the rest of the building. Because we were changing the occupancy for the first floor, that triggered a requirement to sprinkle the whole building, which was a $30,000, $40,000 expense, which just destroyed our budget for the project. So the opportunity there was, I ended up general contracting it. We didn't hire a general contractor. I ended up doing that myself, and Phoebe and I worked on that together. But it's the idea that within every problem is its own solution. You can use the problem to cause its own destruction. So to not be afraid of that. Another thing I hear is, my mind goes blank now, but we'll stick on that one for a little bit. Like, thinking creatively about the problem and wondering, raw material in this problem, can I use and can I flip to change it and to get the whole thing, you know, rotating on a different axis or something like that.
For sure. Yeah. I'm sure you learned a ton being the general contractor on that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I really like that. And, you know, how are you finding these historic buildings? Do you have relationships with brokers? Are you looking on, you know, internet resources?
We find them on the MLS.
Okay.
I mean, we have relationships with local realtor we'll work with, and we're always, you know, looking to build more relationships with that. Typically, the projects we go for, no one else wants to buy.
Yeah.
They're properties that have sat on the market for years, and for some reason, no one has the vision to do it. They can't see what the point would be, what you do with it. It's too risky, or the seller maybe is difficult to work with and won't be able to close the deal. Pretty much all the properties we've ever developed have just been on the MLS, and we've seen them and gone for them.
Mm-hmm, for sure. You know, I have this idea that with older buildings, you know, it's going to be really hard to actually estimate costs because there's so many potential systems upgrades that need to happen. How have you tackled that from like a purchase acquisition standpoint?
We are pretty militant in terms of what we'll actually do, especially when you look at these old properties, and if they've been vacant, it looks like everything needs to be done. You need to rip this out. We need to rip out the walls. This, everything needs to go. This whole thing is beat up. Well, often it's actually not that bad. Like, it looks a lot worse than it is. Often, like, the floors, you can just refinish them, and it's just beautiful wood floors, or the plaster. Okay, it might be beat up in certain spots. So skim coat those spots, and you'll have all the character of the original plaster. So the way we do it is we try and, well, I speak for myself, I try and not think of it as, initially, everything looks like it's wrong, but I have to get into it and think, no, actually, I want to keep this. This is nice. I want to keep this. This is nice. And then I look at the end result. How much money is this going to make? And that has to drive how much we put in, because we're not putting money in it to have it live in it. We're putting money in it so that it can spit out more than we spent. The point of it's supposed to become a functional asset that creates cash. So we're militant with that. We'll do a lot less maybe than some others would. If we can get away with it, absolutely we will, because this is a business.
For sure. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, I love that you found an asset class that basically is other people just don't want, right? Because that gives you a lot more choice and opportunity and leverage when you're negotiating contracts. And it's really great that you found a way to add value to these places that are really beautiful, sometimes in the center of town, and make a business out of it. So that's super awesome. How far is Hutchinson from where you live?
3 hours, about a 3-hour drive.
Okay, so are you finding yourself going there often right now?
Yeah. Phoebe and I, we have 3 young kids. So we have a schedule for the summer where we're here every other week, and then we'll change things up in the fall. But yeah, I mean, we've been involved in property development here for about a year. And I mean, how it works for us is we got to get into it. We got to get into situations and understand and make decisions on the ground. So yeah, we spend a significant amount of time here.
Yeah. And do you have a property manager that you plan on working with, or a designer that's going to make the hotel? How are you managing that?
Yeah, we have an architect. We have an interior designer for the hotel property. Yeah. And then, I mean, at this point in our kind of career growth, it's a lot of what we do is delegation. We'll be the ones probably finding properties and having vision for properties, but a lot of the hands-on work when it comes to renovation or management or just a lot of the different kind of parts of the pieces of the puzzle, we're working with other people to help us with that. This isn't like it was when we were in New Hampshire, where we had a handful of doors where we could do everything. You know, as things scale, it changes. So yeah, we have people who occupy those different places, and that's so important.
Yeah, and that's such a testament to your growth, you know, like to have that kind of problem where you need to have too much to do, that you need to be delegating and building out your team. Just circling back on that, do you have an operator selected for the hotel yet?
We'll do it ourselves.
Okay, so you'll operate yourself. That's cool.
That'll be something else for us to learn.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Mark, for sharing some of your journey with us. And you and Phoebe have obviously accomplished a ton in a short amount of time. And major congratulations. Please give the listeners a way to get a hold of you and anything else you'd like to share.
Yeah, our website is leverproperties.com. That's L-E-V-A-R-E, leverproperties.com. So yeah, you can reach out to us through that. And thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Mark. We'll see you next time.
Take care.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-C-A-P.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.